Previously on X-Men.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the world's most mutated podcast. That's right. It's Uncanny Trek's special coverage of X-Men 92. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Bob, I hope they come up with a whole line of a whole new set of the action figures. They have me sold. I'm telling you, Disney's making money off me.
Wow.
Think of how many action figures they can make from those costumes alone.
This deeply emotional penultimate episode, yeah. That's just the action figure potential. It's so toyetic. Yeah. Can you give me an action figure of Wolverine skeleton coming out of his body?
Give me merchandise. Please, I need it. I need Cyclops in his old uniform.
That's funny. I'm glad Disney is harvesting us both as the suckers we are, Matt.
It's good to know they're hitting each of our favorite things, I think. Mine, toys, and yours, good writing. I don't know.
Matt, I didn't notice anything in particular in the intro this week, but you did.
Yes, Bob. They're the people that are running toward the camera before the heroes and the villains collide. They are affected by that technovirus thing. So,
oh snap!
Little Easter egg there. They like changing that thing up. It's very creative.
They do. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So I got a question, Bob, just for this whole episode, because there's a lot of fight scenes in this episode, and they always play the X-Men theme music when they're fighting. When you read the comic books, do you play that theme music in your head as they're fighting?
Not usually, no, but sometimes when you have a big scene of the X-Men assembling, it does play in my head. The last example I could think of would be the X of Swords crossover. There's at the end, there's a huge scene where Jean Grey gets together a massive X-Men team to go save Cyclops and Cable. That definitely played in that scene in my head.
Yeah, I'm halfway through Fraction's run, and the big fight between, are they called the Dark Avengers, or are they just the bad guy Avengers, Osborn's group?
I think they're called the Dark Avengers. I mean, maybe not in the comic, but right. the name of their comic was the Dark Avengers.
Now, when they're fighting the X-Men, the whole time I'm just in my head. it's a weird feeling. But to go back to what you said earlier, yeah, when the Avengers assemble, I do hear the Marvel the music from the movie playing when I do see them assemble together in comic books.
You go back to the Avengers 99 theme song. That's what you're telling me, Matt?
No, Bob, not the 99 theme song. The Avengers, whatever, 2011, 2012, whatever it was.
Very nice. Very nice. So, Matt, I do have to say the opening parts of this episode a little bit surprised me. I didn't expect we were necessarily going to go with Sad Bastion. That didn't seem to be the vibe I was expecting. So it was intriguing.
I didn't get it either. He thought he had a really great plan, but, you know, those pesky X-Men, they ruined the day. I mean, what did he think was going to happen? And then also, when he put the technovirus on these people, did he think they weren't going to die or get slaughtered? He made his mom into a soldier.
I could see they didn't have time to do this, but I could see Bastion would think they're a lot more protected and non-vulnerable than they would be if they weren't technovirus infected.
That's true. They did give them the strength to fight the X-Men, but did they really have to fight the X-Men to begin with? Come on, Bastion. Well, come on.
In Bastion's mind, yes, that's inevitable.
Therein lies the problem.
Also, speaking of nostalgia, we do have this scene of Jubilee and Sunspot having to run from the anti-mutant mob, very early X-Men 92 vibes, but then Storm and Forge show up to save the day. Very cool scene.
Yeah, I really like this scene because it makes it very obvious that there are people of all different creeds that are not happy with the mutants at this point and everything that's gone down. Like, you do have the Friends of Humanity member, but then there's also a Butcher next to him, and then a lot of normal-looking people who were not infected by this virus also joining in. So, you know, there's a lot more people now that are against the mutants. It's making it a much more heated climate.
Well, and a bunch of people, moronically after last week, were complaining that, oh, wouldn't Magneto's EMP kill everybody on a hospital machine or crash planes? And it's, yes, obviously it would. And see, the show knows that and is dealing with that, but it doesn't have to spell it out in neon letters just because you have poor reading comprehension.
Exactly, Bob. And I felt so much better with my poor reading comprehension that I understood. So thank you. Thank you for this
But it can't be that. It can't be that poor, Matt. It can't be.
No,
that
it's
poor.
It's not that bad. I understood that it was going to be bad. It's like that Young Justice episode we covered where all the people turn into children. All those planes crashed, right, Bob?
Yeah, they're all dead. They're all dead, Matt.
They're all being flown by little kids.
Maybe, Matt, maybe it's actually really easy to fly a plane, and they just don't want you to know how easy it is. Have you ever considered that?
Yeah, I hear a lot of people do it drunk, Bob.
All right. So I'd never considered this dynamic before, but this episode really gives us an interesting idea of the X-Men is mostly being Xavier and Charles having their father-son quarrels, and then Jean is the exasperated mediator between them. I find that to be a really charming dynamic.
I like it too. Not as good as the thruple, but still cool.
No, it's interesting. Yeah. It's interesting.
But one thing I do appreciate about this is we're moving into the scene, and Professor X, of course, is back, and he's thinking he's just going to jump right in and lead the team, and he knows what's right and what's wrong, even though he hasn't been there. I did really appreciate Sunspot pointing out the flaw in Professor X's original logic. You left your school to the guy with an entirely different ideology and expected it just to stay the same. What was your expectation leaving Magneto there?
Well, I think people are, I don't know, people seem a little confused on these points where they fault Professor X for having too pacifist a response to the mutant massacre at Genosha. But then they also, some of the same people will fault Professor X for leaving Magneto in charge. And I feel like you can complain about one or the other, but you can't complain about both. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
I will say I'm big Professor X hater, confirmed over here, Professor X hater. I wish he'd stayed with the Shi'ar. Would have been more interesting storytelling to my mind. But that being said, I don't know. I think Professor X's logic of this will transform Magneto and give him a stake in mutant-human relations and his fellow mutants, I think it's a good plan. Maybe he should have anticipated that some Sentinel force is going to do a genocide against mutants, but, I mean, when is that not the case?
Yeah, that's always the problem.
The one thing I was going to, and this isn't a huge criticism of the show, it's just something, it's just the character dynamic that the show, for understandable reasons, can't do, is that in the comics, specifically lately in X-Men Red, Sunspot is actually Magneto's student for quite a while in the 80s when Magneto leads the New Mutants. And in the current comic in X-Men Red, Sunspot actually does have a really affectionate relationship with Magneto as his old teacher. And so I don't know, they can't really fully do that here, which I felt was a little sad, if that makes sense.
Yeah, if only Beau DeMeo wasn't trying to shove so many plots into a single season.
Clearly, he should just have as many episodes as there have been X-Men comics. That's clearly the answer
right,
here.
Exactly. It's the only way to do this. We want every character should have a complete backstory before the end of all this.
So the other detail I wanted to bring out was, and this is me getting out of my areas of X-Men expertise because I don't remember these stories super well, but this version of Bastion seems pretty different from the versions of Bastions I vaguely remember from Operation Zero Tolerance and from the Yost X-Force that you're currently reading. He seems a lot more emo, and also the fact that he's a mutant himself somewhat reminds me of a later character named Karima Shapender, a.k.a. the Omega Sentinel, who's an X-Men in the late aughts and the teens. Mm-hmm. And so I like Karima Shapender a lot. One of my only big criticisms about House of X and Powers of Ten is that it makes her a villain because just all the Sentinels have to be villains. But I don't know. It was interesting to me that Bastion is taking on these, to me, these characteristics of her. Did Magneto referring to Lilandra as Charles's, quote, Charles's Shi'ar bird queen, unquote. And then I also liked him saying that we will no longer simper like beggars for tolerance. That was great.
Yeah, Magneto with the lines here. I mean, I want to follow Magneto, Bob. Don't you? Don't you just want to follow Magneto? Come on. We're not mutants, but come on.
destroying the world is pretty extreme, but it's hard to say he's wrong after the Genosha massacre,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's got a good point. We understand.
Yeah, some very valid points. And which is why I did actually think the scene of Rogue and Sunspot joining Magneto was pretty awesome.
I did too. I didn't expect Sunspot. I was thinking he'd hang out with Jubilee some more, but you know, they seem to be buddy-buddy for good.
It was interesting. Even before that happened, I was marveling at how big the cast had become. We literally had 13 people who are the X-Men facing down Magneto. And so when they have Rogue and Sunspot go with Magneto, on the one hand, it's a cool way to have ideological disagreement among the X-Men, but it's also just, oh man, yeah, you need to. You got too many X-Men.
But Bob, wouldn't you agree that all these X-Men, Wolverine is not getting enough character development?
I would say that Wolverine is getting exactly the right amount of character development, Matt, which is to say his adamantium skeleton removed, which is all he needs.
Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, you're right on that, Bob.
Yeah. So I thought it might be worth pausing and running down the 13-person roll call, and maybe we should just do it as who's the blue team, who's the gold team. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, Bob.
So, Matt, who's on the blue team?
So on the blue team, Bob, we have Cyclops, Wolverine, Xavier, Nightcrawler, and Jubilee.
Very good.
Now let's keep in mind, this is the team that is sent to space to fight the Master of Magnetism. Okay? All right, now let's talk about gold team.
Who's on gold team, Matt?
We've got Jean Grey, Storm, Beast, Morph, Forge, and Cable. So if you were the leader of the X-Men, who would you flip-flop around, Bob, so you would not run into some of the problems you had in this episode?
Well, I sort of wonder if the thinking here isn't that Xavier wants a free hand to deal with Magneto himself, and so that's why he doesn't take any of the Omegas with him.
Not just that, Bob. I'm talking about Wolverine. Why isn't Wolverine on the gold team and then put Jean Grey on the blue team so she's not around Cable? Why are they together?
Well, so you want to split. I mean, Jean and Scott as the two leaders, right? So they need to be separate. And then I think they're thinking that, Cable will have less of a hard time with Jean than he will with Cyclops. Does that make sense?
See, that I disagree with, because I feel Cyclops and Cable, they don't get along great, but it's still Cable's his son. So see where this is going. Cable can't hurt Cyclops, right, with his powers, if that's my understanding. Because it's how Cyclops can't hurt Havoc. Havoc can't hurt Cyclops.
You know, that's an interesting point. I don't know how much the animated series has explored that idea or buys into that idea. But yeah, that's an interesting idea.
It just makes me think this whole thing between Cable and Jean that we do see later on, I think it's just going to be a cop-out. And they're like, oh, I can't hurt you because technically you have my same DNA.
It would be a question, would that apply to Jean, since she's not technically... Yeah, she's the clone of Cable's mother, or Cable's mother is the clone of her.
It's very interesting, and I'm glad they did it that way. I'm just saying, if you're going to make these teams this way and you're a leader trying to make sure, you know, you have the right people for what you're doing, I just feel Wolverine would not be the one to send out. But that's an older... That's a joke anyway. Why are you sending a man made of metal to fight the Magneto guy? I mean, come on.
If we are going to overread the team selection... I don't know. I do think it is interesting that Xavier sends all of his big guns except for himself, which would be, to me, Jean, Storm, and Cable are the three big guns.
Yeah.
He sends them all to stop the Omega Sentinels, and then he's, I can handle Magneto, and also I can handle Magneto in my own way, and nobody on Blue Team is powerful enough to do anything about that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, he's got Cyclops with him, so he can zap Cyclops if he needs to take Cyclops in line. Just in case.
Yeah. So I did want to ask, before, we don't really know since they defect before we have the team assignments, but do you think they would have put Rogue on blue team and Sunspot on gold team?
Honestly, I think they would have put both on blue, but if you had to keep the number the same or whatever, I would put Rogue on the blue team for her strength and the flying. Gold team would need Sunspot to have like a blaster or someone that can shoot stuff other than Cable's gun.
Yeah, and Storm's lightning, but yeah, I see what you're saying. But the numbers can't really be even since it's 13. Since he already overpowered Gold, since Gold Team has more people, I assumed you would keep the same dynamic of Gold having one more than Blue, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
All right, Matt. So I do think it's a little sad that they can't bring Bishop back, but man, 13 X-Men is, as the end of Giant Size X-Men number one says, what are we going to do with all these X-Men? So yeah, you probably don't want to bring Bishop back. Save that for season two, probably. But I did appreciate Rogue's mentioning Bishop as a reason she's defecting.
Apparently, Beau DeMeo is a lot like us as kids, Bob, and he was very upset that the X-Men did not stay when they showed up in those like single episodes, you know. So he just he made a giant team.
We get Forge, Nightcrawler, and Bishop, and Morph all stay with the team, at least for some periods. It's great.
But going back to Bishop, Bob, where is he? Where is Bishop? I mean, he went back to the future. Couldn't he come back real ASAP, even though more time has taken place? He could come back with adult Cable.
I don't know if how precise time traveling is in what they're imagining for X-Men 97, or even how precise it was in the original show. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you just fall through that circular thing, and you're where you need to be.
If he came back with adult Cable, presumably he would be old man Bishop.
You don't want old man Bishop, so they should trade out. This gets way too complicated. I have to have pictures to show this. Somehow we need young Bishop and adult Cable in the same room together, but they know each other well enough to get along and enough about the future.
This would just be an idea for the future thing. It's obviously not something they have time to deal with in the finale, but it would be interesting to see Kid Cable from the recent X-Men comics and, yeah, slightly older Bishop. That would be an interesting dynamic. Yeah,
Kid Cable loves his guns even more than adult Cable. That's some hilarious stuff.
And it is interesting that they're, and I forget how this was handled in X-Men 92, but it is interesting that X-Men 97 is unifying Bishop and Cable, because in the comics, Bishop and Cable are from very different futures.
Right. They're from alternate futures, right? It's not the, yeah, it's yeah. not, yeah.
Well, so. And also like very different timelines, because I think Bishop's is relatively close, whereas Cable's is 1,000 years out or something. Storm is probably still alive in Bishop's future, whereas in Cable's future, it's 1,000 years later.
Yeah, she's long dead then. I have a question for you, Bob. They all decide that they need to go to, because the X-Mansion is destroyed and Magneto is back up in space, they decide they have to go to Muir Island. Mm-hmm. Everyone on the internet is up in arms about Cyclops saying that Nightcrawler was going to teleport them from New York to Muir Island.
People ought to calm down, but I agree that that was stupid. Yeah, that's dumb.
What would have made him even more awesome is if Nightcrawler teleported them all to Magneto's base instead of flying the X-Jet. But aren't you glad, Bob, the bagpipes made a return so you know that Muir Island is where it is located?
I missed that, but I'm glad that they dropped it. I'm very glad that they dropped it.
Bob, no Moira, no Banshee.
Professor X's dialogue does seem to confirm that Moira is dead. Banshee and Mero were dead for sure, pretty much, because of the way they got blasted. But I think we suspected Moira was dead, but I don't think we had confirmation of it. But Xavier's dialogue seems to be confirmation.
Well, Bob, on a happier note, while Moira and Banshee aren't there, there is that motorcycle that Toy Biz put out for Wolverine.
That's funny, Matt. I honestly missed that too, totally. But that's very funny. You've got the picture in our notes. I'm looking at the claws on the side of the motorcycle from this 90s toy. It's appropriately extreme, I would say.
If Bo DeMeo can somehow put the Magneto Magnetron in an episode, I will die a happy man.
I'm looking at this, and man, the Wolverine cycle, I like sort of remember, but don't really remember. But man, the Magnetron, this is really coming back to me. I mean, I didn't have this because I wasn't rich, but man.
Also, I don't think I wanted that, though. I don't think Magneto requires a vehicle like that.
Literally shoots magnets. As I stare into these two things more, the Wolverine severed head on the Wolverine cycle, or what looks like Wolverine's severed head, doesn't it almost maybe more seem like this should be Sabretooth's cycle? Sabretooth should kill and dismember Wolverine and then like him put the parts of him on the cycle and ride it around. Doesn't that seem more right to you?
Yeah, I want to say it flipped around to have the mask, if I remember correctly. I don't know. Oh, wow. I actually didn't even notice the head, Bob, till you mentioned it. And that just makes this thing incredibly creepy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just creepy in general, and then it's maybe even more creepy if Wolverine's actually going to ride that thing.
maybe it's one of his clones or like an alternate Wolverine, and he just stuck it on there as a
hunting trophy.
Right.
I'm thinking about it more, and in one of the dark futures in a Wolverine comic, they definitely should have Tooth having killed Logan and turned him into a motorcycle riding around on him. The exhaust pipes can be made out of Wolverine's adamantium bones.
That's actually a really good idea, Bob. So, Hasbro, if you're listening, we need you to re-release this toy, but for the new X-Men figures, can you do that for us, please? That'd be great.
Yeah.
It'll sit on shelves forever.
And then, thinking about the Magneto Magnetron, obviously this is the 90s Magneto, and the costume is mostly right, but it really does give me big vibes of those famous scenes from, I think it's Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, or maybe it's the Fantastic Four cartoon from the 60s, where Magneto's really lame.
Yeah.
And it really has Magneto in pre-Pride of the X-Men animation vibe.
I don't dig the Magnetron as much. It really freaks me out.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting in a campy, make a cartoon out of Magneto way.
I wonder who designed this thing and like what they were on.
Matt, speaking of design choices, stuff is going to get really real when Xavier shows up in a Savage Land cameo outfit.
Bob, when he has that outfit on, it's going down. He's going to fight. There's no telling what's going to happen.
He's going to get lost in the Savage Land. Yeah,
he may climb some rocks.
He might have some off-panel like good times with his good friend Magneto.
Ride a dinosaur.
Might ride a dinosaur. Is it time to run down all the other great costume returns besides Xavier's Savage Land costume?
Cyclops with the hood piece, which I don't like that. I like that costume after Astonishing X-Men and stuff, but when it's in the 90s, I want the 90s outfit. That's the better look for me.
Oh, strongly disagree. The 90s costume is terrible.
I love that costume. When I think Cyclops, that's the one I think. The whole Jim Lee look.
Yeah.
I know you hate Jim Lee, but that's what it is.
I do hate Jim Lee, and I hate that costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in there, I think it's either their Neil Adams or their Dave Cockrum outfits, the ones they were rocking in the 70s.
Right.
We've got Cyclops in I think that's his. I think that's the Neil Adams costume that was also used in the early days of Claremont's X-Men. Then we've got Jean in her Marvel Girl outfit, which I think is a Neil Adams design. And then you've got Wolverine in his costume, which his old 70s, early 80s costume, which I think is a Dave Cockrum design. And then Rogue with her hood and her kind of long green robe. That I think that's supposed to be the Age of Apocalypse look, more or less.
It's the same costume she wore in the flashbacks in season 2, A Rogue's Tale, when she's being trained by Mystique as a thief or whatever.
Okay.
So it's a callback to that, but you are right. It has the same. I think that costume was based on the Age of Apocalypse look. So yeah, it makes sense.
Although that might have predated the Age of Apocalypse.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And then she also wore that outfit in the Uncanny Avengers and X-Men Legacy days and the late aughts and early teens. And then Jubilee, we talked about before. She looks like she did in the aughts, in the era when she was a vampire, but not only in the era when she was a vampire. And then I don't know if you remember this, and I don't know, I can't remember who the artist was off the top of my head, but in the late 90s and the early aughts, pre-Morrison run, Cable joined the X-Men, the main X-Men, and he had this blue costume, and that's what this looks like, his turn of the millennium. After his book and X-Force get canceled and he joins the X-Men.
I remember this costume. They actually did make an action figure out of it. So, yeah, they have 400 Cable action figures.
I didn't know that had made it to the action figures.
Yeah, I actually like that costume as well, too, but it looks a lot like Cyclops in the same. Do you like the Jean Grey Marvel Girl look?
Oh, I love it. I don't know if it makes sense for her to have as an ongoing thing, right? Because it's such a throwback, if you give it to her as an ongoing thing, it maybe sticks her in the past. But no, I adore it. It's a beautiful costume. It's beautiful, simple colors. It's so much better than most of her other costumes, which are mostly very terrible.
And the Wolverine outfit is one of my favorites too, though. I like that. I still like the yellow with the black tiger stripe stuff. I still like that way better. But this brown and orange is like very close second.
I like them both. I can kind of see why, for coloring reasons, you might want to go for the yellow and black tiger stripe, but I like them both.
Now, Bob, you did leave out Morph's shoulder pads.
Oh, I missed Morph's shoulder pads. Matt, can I have a confession to you about Morph that makes me feel really dumb?
Sure.
So I never considered, you know, we have Morph with albino type skin, very pale white skin in this series. And I never thought about that at all, but that's exactly look from Age of Apocalypse. Now, granted, it's a very different, more absurd superheroic costume in Age of Apocalypse, but I just assumed that they were just experimenting with Morph. But I feel really like I'm really ridiculous for not noticing the similarity to their past look in Age of Apocalypse.
I think they then stole that for the Chameleon in Spider-Man, because he had the same look in the animated series of Spider-Man, too.
Yeah.
With the white face.
But the Chameleon comes before Age of Apocalypse Morph, though, because this is an Age of Apocalypse 96.
And yes.
The Spider-Man show 94.
Oh, you're right. So maybe Age of Apocalypse stole. Because I remember. Oh, you know what? I even remember us questioning whether that was Chameleon or Morph way back in the day.
Oh, interesting.
So yes, that's what. Okay, now it makes sense. Maybe they just stole that idea because it does. It's an interesting look when you're a shapeshifter to be this non-binary character.
Yeah, there's a way that it kind of thematically ties in with the non-binary identity that Morph has, and I think in some way they both look like Chameleon Boy, or sometimes just Chameleon from the Legion of Superheroes, who sometimes is also treated as non-binary. And Chameleon doesn't have that pale white skin. They usually have orange skin, but it is interesting that it's treated in a similar way.
Well, Bob, do you think these costumes are going to stick?
My impression was more no. My impression was that it was more just a special nostalgia occasion. Do you think they'll stick?
I think I would kind of like to see some sticks, especially Storms. I think Storms is just wicked and needs to stick around. And I think they did that on purpose, having her get that costume before this whole thing. I love her costume.
I love that Cockrum costume, and it's been so happy to see it. But I do, and like you say, she switched to it a couple episodes back. I do. It is one of those, like, the Wonder Woman costume where it's a dilemma because it's so iconic, but it's also so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous, but it fits. She's a damn weather witch. She looks like a weather witch.
Yeah, she is a weather witch. But I also, I will say, I mostly don't like the 90s costumes as much as these classic late 60s, late 70s costumes. But I do actually really like Storm having the full gray bodysuit with X logos on them. That always feels very right to me.
I would just love to, for them to just switch them out every now and then, just to have like some differences. Like, they don't have to keep the same costume every time. Here's Wolverine in this other outfit. Because even if you think back to the original run, you remember those different designs they did with those characters. With Storm with the mohawk, they did a couple, some of the episodes for the future. And anytime they did change their costume, it was memorable.
Well, and you are making me think, I was thinking more one-off nostalgia thing, but by reminding me that, they switched Storm to the Cockrum costume a couple episodes ago and have stuck with it. That does, in my mind, that does make it seem more likely that more of these might stick for longer.
And these costumes were just pure pride of the X-Men. We got what should have been the the original pilot to that show. Yeah, not the pilot, only the next episode or something.
It's even them going to Asteroid M. Right. Nightcrawler's on the squad. All that's missing is Dazzler, really, and Jubilee is sort of Dazzler.
You got it.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're absolutely right. They're really going for Pride of the X-Men nostalgia here, too. Yeah,
he's just hitting up all the nostalgia. He's just shooting us with heroin in every arm.
So, Matt, Morph has a new transformation. Their new transformation is they're the Hulk. Were you happy to see the Hulk?
They has Hulk powers. So, Bob, why don't they just turn into Magneto?
The debate about their powers is so tedious, right? I'm so tired of having it.
What really would have fixed things, Bob?
What's that?
Had Morph turned into magic? We wouldn't have the Nightcrawler problem.
I was thinking that earlier with that Muir Island thing, that it would have been better if... Could they just have had Ileana join? I mean, as much as I love Nightcrawler, could they have just had Ileana join? That way you get swords and long-range teleporting.
Morph could just turn themselves into Ileana, like they did in the earlier episode.
I did really like Beast doing the one-hand clapping gag with the Sentinel. It was really cheap, but it was also very funny and very much felt like a Beast thing.
It made me giggle because it is really ridiculous, but it just adds to Beast's charm. The way he's taking out something with a swinging hand. It's awesome. Yeah.
Well, and what did you think of the fight scene with Mr. Sinister and Jean? I don't think I've ever seen Mr. Sinister really fight. Maybe in some comics like Inferno, he shoots some energy at somebody. But to have him be this interesting and varied physical threat, I was just super impressed by it.
Yeah, I always thought he was bulky and stuff as a kid and just stood there and shot lasers. But, I mean, he was all over the place here and just all kinds of cool telekinetic stuff. And Jean was the same way. I mean, she was literally shooting, like, telekinetic knives at him. Where was this Jean in the original run? which brings me to a theory, Bob. I wonder if the Jean we saw in the entire original animated series was actually Madeline Pryor. And that's why she was always falling over and weak, because she never really had the training that Jean had.
Oh, that's an interesting
point. Wasn't the 100%, telepath, whatever. There's got to be something there.
I like that you bring up the training angle, because when I was looking at this theory in the notes, on the one hand, I like it. I like the big swerve of it. But on the other hand, I like Madeline to be powerful, too. I like that you make it about training. That's
but she's
point.
Powerful in other forms, though, when she comes to Goblin Queen.
That's interesting to think about if you went with Madeline more as a telepath and Jean more as a telekinetic.
There you go. See, now you're thinking. Now you're thinking like Bo DeMeo. Stay off OnlyFans.
Oh, man. They'll take your job, bro. They'll take your job. Hell, man, maybe he makes enough off OnlyFans that this X-Men stuff's just a sideline.
Yeah, I want to go subscribe to it just so I can give him some money. Thank you for this.
Bo DeMeo Solidarity Fund. I will say, I really didn't expect to see the Jubilee Sunspot angle go into them fighting. But in some ways it fits. In the 90s and X-Force, I think in the mid-90s, Sunspot did have a very weird and complicated villain story.
The Sunspot Jubilee thing, this is the one area I wish there was a little more time to, like, spread out a little bit.
On the one hand, I see what you're saying. On the other hand, do you really?
Probably not, because I don't care that much. But if you're going to... I didn't feel like it had the emotional they wanted it to. It was, oh, Sunspot's joining the bad guys. Cool. That was more of my thing. We're not really the bad guys, but you know what I mean. The other team, cool.
I do hope that with whatever we're doing in Season 2, we get to a place with Sunspot where he can be a little bit more the Sunspot he is in some of the comics, rather than just being the new, most junior X-Man.
I mean, he's literally the new Jubilee. Exactly. Even in the intro, he has the exact same spot she used to have with running into...
Maybe that would be better served with a different character who has less of a personality and less of a backstory than Bobby.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, Matt, as much as I dislike Xavier and his ideology, I really have to give it to him. His line to Magneto about, quote, "For all your talk about ruling the world, it's the world that rules you." That was a sick burn, man. That was sick.
Poor Magneto. How will he ever recover with his awesome powers?
Well, he'll recover by putting his helmet on Xavier's head and starting to squeeze, Matt.
So he's supposed to be squashing that helmet. Yeah, that okay. I knew they couldn't go too far with it. I think he's supposed to be making it tighter and that Xavier is in pain.
That's a reference, I think, to an absolutely amazing scene in X-Men Red, which X-Men Red falls apart as a comic, but the first four or so issues are some of the best X-Men comics ever written. And Magneto challenges this mutant called Taren the Uncaring. And he's like, "We can use our costume, right?" As he starts to fight. And it's a ritual fight on Arrakko or Mars. And Taren's, "Yeah." And so Magneto immediately drops his helmet with his magnetism on the guy's head. And the guy's power is that he's a telekinetic, but for genetics. So he can use his mind to warp people's genetics. And so that's how he always wins, but Magneto immediately drops the helmet on him, blocks his power, and then Taren starts to say, "I sir," but he doesn't finish, "I surrender," and Magneto breaks his neck.
Damn.
It's so good. Yeah. And there's also an angle, like Sunspot is watching in the crowd, and one of the reasons Magneto is killing Taren is that Taren killed Sunspot in an earlier fight, and then, you know, Sunspot gets resurrected because of Krakoa. And there's a mutant from Arrakko named Iska the Unbeaten who can't lose. And and so to sink the victory right before the battle starts, Sunspot goes up to Iska and it's, "Hey, Iska, I bet you that Taren wins." It's so good. I was actually amazed at how Bo DeMeo and this episode teased us, man, because Bo DeMeo tells us we need to read Fatal Attractions, right?
Right.
So my immediate first thought, I'm sure most people's first thought, is, okay, so Wolverine's going to get that skeleton ripped out.
We're going to see that skeleton come out that body. We are.
When they're having the big fight and Magneto just throws Wolverine to the side at first, I was, oh, maybe Bo DeMeo is just trying to punk us. Maybe he's just trying to toy with us. And what they're actually going to do is, because if you remember in the comic, Xavier wipes Magneto's mind in retaliation for ripping out the skeleton, and that creates Onslaught. And people have been theorizing hard for at least a week that Onslaught is coming.
Oh, they've been real hard on that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I was, oh, okay, Bo DeMeo, a weird troll, but I was, oh, okay, he's trolling us, and it's just about the mind wiping and the Onslaught. It's not about the skeleton. Then you have the surprise of Wolverine swooping in and stabbing Magneto in the back like he does in the climax of the Morrison. It's amazing. And I'm, oh, God, Magneto is totally dead. dead, but they are. And he just said all this to totally swerve us with Wolverine getting him in the back. And but they're still going to do something with Onslaught with Magneto dying. Then Magneto turns around and does the Fatal Attractions thing.
These people don't feel pain, guys. They don't feel pain. They just keep beating each other and it just keeps going. And you get the climax of every X-Men series ever. Yeah, God, it's amazing. I mean, my jaw dropped, Bob, when I thought Magneto was killed by Wolverine. I was, oh, man, oh, that's so awesome. And then it's just, what? He's still talking, and now the skeleton's coming out. Holy, how are they going to? And then they did such a good job, too. The animators, props to them, because they turned a scene that should have been, yes, it was violent, but it should have been way more violent than what we were seeing then. I mean, it was really cool, though. It still looked awesome. It looked like it did in Fatal Attractions. I was impressed with that.
The last frame of the skeleton starting to come out before the episode ends, and they put it up against the panel in the comic. And on the one hand, they look very different, especially in the coloring, but there's a marked visual similarity.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, it was obviously a labor of love the way they put that together. I do have to ask you this, Bob. What was Wolverine thinking if he's gonna kill Magneto? How are they gonna fix the Earth?
At that point, it's Wolverine in berserker mode, and it's also, if Xavier can't control him, then there's no way to do it at all.
They're just going to get Polaris to fix it.
Well, she's busy not getting with Bobby Drake.
Because he's dead in Genosha.
Magneto's surviving that, or at least for a little bit, that initial stabbing. It very much also feels like something X-Men Red did in the past couple years, where in a war with the Eternals, Magneto gets killed, but he uses his powers to keep himself alive for a few more hours. And that very much felt like what was going on here. He's almost holding himself together with his magnetism, if that makes sense. I'm just amazed. Creators tease people online a lot, right, about what's coming.
Right.
I've never seen it so well executed to Bo DeMeo teasing us and then what we get. Him telling people to read Fatal Attractions and then the way, to me, that worked with the rhythm of what happens in the climax. Obviously, I think anybody just watching this would really enjoy it. And the comic, so much the better. But the payoff of, like, knowing what he said about it, knowing the comic, seeing how these multiple comics interact with what they do in the climax, it really is an interesting model of storytelling, I think.
Well, I agree. And for next week, Bob, he's wanting us to watch a Star Trek The Next Generation episode.
Which... Oh, man. So that's real? I saw that and I thought that was a meme or fake news or a
Bob,
joke.
No, Bob, that's not a joke. He wants us to watch Cause and Effect with Kelsey Grammer.
What you're saying is that actually Paramount is going to buy up Disney, and so that the end of X-Men 97 is going to be a Frasier crossover. Yeah. Is that what you're telling me, Matt?
I'm saying temporal anomaly, Bob. Temporal anomaly is what I'm saying. Also, he told us to watch the last episode of the first season of X-Men 92.
He's been saying that. He's been banging that drum for a while.
Yeah. The thing that kills me is people are actually going back and watching these, therefore getting more streaming, getting these platforms more streaming. Like, what a great way to get more fan interaction and get more people on your streaming service.
No, it's interesting, and you've seen versions of this before, right? When Ahsoka was on Disney Plus, they would put up relevant episodes from the Clone Wars and Rebels for people to watch.
This is the right way to do this.
I would have to say I think Disney's managing it a lot better than Ahsoka did, although they're, in some ways they're working with a lot less. They're just working with 5 seasons of an early 90s cartoon, whereas Ahsoka has, I think, 4 seasons of Rebels and God knows how many seasons of Clone Wars to work with.
But also having the writer giving you some of his inspirations to go back and read ahead of time so you're prepared for the episode, it's brilliant.
Who was your character of the week? I know you've been through some confusion and you've been through some multiple candidates.
I got rid of my sunspot thing because you schooled me on that.
I wasn't meaning to tell you that.
Okay, Bob, it's okay. Anyway, I'm just going to give it to Wolverine, Bob, because honestly, I mean, Berserker Rage, the costume, the motorcycle, come on. This is the most character development you're going to get a Wolverine this season. And I'm happy for it. I don't want any more after this. You can kill him after this.
All you fans want character development. I just want him to have a motorcycle in the background and to lose a skeleton.
He can go off and die and be Old Man Logan somewhere like he did in the movie. Just go do that.
I'll give it to Rogue, man. Love what the episode has done to Rogue. But one great scene we didn't talk about that I did want to shout out was Jean and Storm reuniting as friends, but I would say with a heavy subtext. And that was really sweet and cool. And Jean and Storm being like two Omega besties, I like that a lot.
That's a really sweet scene, too. Another scene we did not mention was when Rogue does defect. I originally thought that was her coat she was giving Professor X. It's Gambit's coat.
Yeah.
And that's very sweet and sad. It's showing that she's moved on.
Poor Gambit. It had to defect Rogue and Sunspot and kill Gambit because it's just too many dang X-Men. If things go well, we are going to cover both the finale and the do a season wrap-up episode for you next week. And then if things go well after that and we don't hate it, we're going to start doing a lot shorter and less detailed, but short coverage of season 2 of the My Adventures with Superman show, which is the worst title ever. I prefer to just think of it as Superman 2023, but please join us for that. But in teasing up our probable coverage of Superman 2023, Matt, I wanted to raise a question to you. I had a real serious Superman question that came up on the internet this week.
Well, what was that question, Bob?
Matt, why does James Gunn think it's a good idea to advertise his new Superman movie by having Superman not doing anything during 9/11?
What are you talking about, Bob?
You know, Superman's sitting there, he's lacing up his boots, and 9/11's just happening in the background. Is that really good advertisement for the new movie, Matt? Don't you want Superman to stop 9/11?
Where are you seeing 9/11 at, Bob? What is this?
It's all over the internet, Matt.
Bob, that's a meme. Let me clarify. The actual Superman on the bed, Bob, that's from the film, yes. But there's like some brainiac attack or some weird shit going on behind him. It's not 9/11. You must have seen the meme first.
So you mean also that you mean Ghidorah and Angoras aren't going to be in it either? I saw another image where it's Angoras hanging on to Ghidorah's neck. You're telling me it's not going to be the DC and the Toho Monster Universe crossover?
No, Bob, I don't think so. Well, Bob, as a kid, okay. When I watched Batman 1989, my favorite scene was when Batman got dressed in his little chamber. I think that's what they're going for.
Interesting.
When he suits up. Everybody likes the suit-up scenes. That's just what's going on here.
In all seriousness, though, the original image, it did look crappy, right? Is that just me being cynical? But I thought it looked crappy.
I have to admit, the costume was not my favorite, and people immediately went and gave him the Christopher Reeve suit. Like, they edited it. I'll have to show you another one of those. To me, that looks so much better, but then the movie's not being marketed just to me. Yeah. Some people actually liked the Snyderverse and all that crap is what it is. I think he's trying to make everybody happy and put a little bit of everything in there. The symbol on his chest is the one from Kingdom Come, I think, and the outfit looks like the one that the dude in the Man of Steel had. Like, it has the little pieces that look like microfiber. But it's a different shade. The shading is weird, too. It bothers me.
I don't know. It's not even the costume complaint for me, necessarily.
Oh, you just mean it looks like a low-quality image. You're saying it looks like... Yeah, it just doesn't look like it's been filmed right. Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying there, too. I wondered the same thing, because I thought it was just the actor suiting up at first, and they just took a shot of him backstage. I remember when Batman Returns released, there was a shot of Michelle Pfeiffer lacing up her boots to get in the Catwoman outfit. That wasn't part of the film. It was just a backstage photo. I thought this is what that was too, but it's not. It's literally, this is what they're going for. He's taking his time getting ready, even though there's some disaster going on outside. My brother sent me one with the Superman, Christopher Reeve from Superman 3 in the dark costume, you know, when he goes bad, drinking whiskey while the fight's going on in the back.
So my other question, though, did they intend for people to meme the crap out of that image? Because I joke about thinking that Superman wasn't doing anything during 9/11, but immediately the internet was flooded with memes of that image, which a lot of which I thought were very funny, right? There was the 9/11 one, there was the one with Ghidorah and Angoras, there was one with Bob from Twin Peaks. I thought those memes were super funny, but do you think that's what DC marketing or Discovery marketing wanted to happen? Or do you think people just saw the crappy image and like played with it?
They just saw it and played with it. They do that with everything, though. I mean, you can't release an image for any film without them memeing it to death.
That's true.
I feel like they need to... I feel DC, the people at James Gunn's think tank or whatever, could they have maybe like... thought about that ahead of time and not made it so simple to like, you know.
but I actually think from their perspective it's probably good. I do wonder if they put out like an intentionally easy meme where you just drop something else in the background, you know.
Yeah, maybe they did. Maybe it could be a marketing technique. I don't think it's a bad idea.
Well, and it's also, it's just, you can see why the current media environment makes people schizophrenic, because it's always, is this how the corporation wants me to act with the product, right?
Yeah, that's just very true. Right. Yeah.
It's a shame to end a great episode of X-Men on a talk about a really crappy image of Superman, but come back to us for the finale, come back to us for the season wrap-up, come back to us for our Superman 2023 coverage if Superman 2023 Season 2 is not, in fact, terrible. We are Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening.